Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast by radio amateurs with a focus on homebrew electronics. We get together on the internet to swap ideas about radio construction projects. Our website is www.soldersmoke.com. Please send feedback to soldersmoke, that's one word, at yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke.
All right. Hold on a second here. Let me blow some of the dust off of this thing. It's been a while. Is this thing working? Hold on. Yeah. All right. Yeah, it's been a while. Welcome back. It's the 14th of September. I was about to say 1958. 2008. 1958, because this is a big one for me, guys. I told you I was born during the International Geophysical Year, IGY, and that was 50 years ago. So this is the big 5-0 for me. And I feel good about it, I tell you. I feel like I ought to be 50, and I am now. So anyway, here we are, Solder Smoke 91. And I've been away for a while. I got a good excuse. The last two Sundays, we usually record here on Sunday morning, and the last two Sunday mornings found me and the family at sea, on the Tyrrhenian Sea, out in the Med, on the way to and coming back from the beautiful Italian island of Sardinia. What an amazing place. Yeah, I know you guys enjoyed the Italian travelogue, so before we get to the real Solder Smoke, I'll tell you a little bit about the trip. Sardinia is a big island. It's the second largest island in the Med after Sicily. It's out there to the west, just south of Corsica. About 1.6 million people on the island. It's quite big. It'll take you 4, 5, 6 hours to drive the length of it. And we opted not to do that. We traveled out to Sardinia for a week at the beach, and we traveled in a way that I think it's a bit unusual from the U.S. perspective. We put our car on the ferry boat. A big ferry boat carries about 2,000 passengers. Picked us up in the port of Civitavecchia, which is about an hour northwest of Rome. Drive the car right on. All the stuff is in the car. You don't have no packing, no carrying stuff around, no struggling through security or checking in with airlines. You just drive right onto that big boat, and there you are. It's about 14 hours to get out there, but that's okay because the ship departs at 6:30 in the evening. So you get on, you go out, and you watch the. You watch the boat sail out from the harbor, enjoy a little of the ocean air, and go in and have dinner. A couple nice restaurants on board. Sit around, go back out, take a look at the stars. Stars fantastic, by the way. Really, for those of you also interested in astronomy, I really recommend the middle of the Tyrrhenian Sea for a great view of the Milky Way. And back into the cabin, we had our own little cabin for the four of us, and slept very nicely. Up in the morning, in time for breakfast, and then you're arriving at the very charming Italian city of Cagliari on the southern part of Sardinia. The place we went to was near a town called Villa Simius, which is about an hour east of Cagliari. Cagliari is the main city in Sardinia. And a beautiful coastline, kind of really dry, kind of dry mountains around the beach. All these great little coves coming in. The kids loved it. It was great swimming. Not really heavy pounding ocean surf. Really more like gentle kind of Mediterranean cove. Kind of little inlet situations. Each beach that you go to is really different. Really amazing geography rising up. The water is just crystal clear. As soon as I saw that clear water, I ran out and got the kids some snorkel gear. So they spent the week happily snorkeling. And just a great week. Sardinia is a really beautiful place. I didn't bring much radio gear with me. I mentioned on the blog that I brought my trusty Sony shortwave receiver that I listened to a bit early in the morning. I had my BlackBerry with me so I could read QRP-L and surf the web a bit. And of course I brought SSDRA, solid state design for the radio amateur, with me, but I guess I'm pleased to report that because you're supposed to take a break on vacation, I didn't open it up once. But I did do some shortwave listening, but a great trip, and Sardinia, I recommend it. A couple other notes on Travelog here. I wanted to mention, a few weeks ago I was talking about ON5EX's bicycle beacon on QRSS. Those of you who are interested in QRSS or watching the action on that mode, know that Johan, ON5EX, has come up with a really neat little bicycle that appears to ride across the screens of the QRSS software. I guess it was inspired by Johan that I started thinking about bicycles, and shortly before we went out to Sardinia, the kids came in and said, "Dad, get out our bicycles. Let's go bike riding." Normally, I would just take out theirs and watch them ride around the piazza for a while. But inspired by Johan, I pulled out my old bicycle and went bicycle riding through the neighborhood of Trastevere here in Rome. So thanks to Johan for getting me back into bicycling. Another item is back in action here is the telescope. I pulled out my 6-inch Dobsonian reflector. I haven't used it during the time that I've been here in Rome, and Billy and I took it up onto the roof and have used it to watch Jupiter and the moon. Skies in Rome are pretty much as bad as you'd expect, and I was reminded how bad they are when I was out in the Med and from the ship. The Milky Way has real structure to it. You can see branches of it. It's almost bright, the Milky Way, just cutting across the sky, slicing into Sagittarius there. Really amazing. And it made me realize exactly how poor the seeing is here from the heart of central Rome, as you'd expect. Lots of light pollution here. But anyway, we can still see Jupiter, and we've been using this telescope to take a look at Jupiter and its moons and our moon, and so glad to be back in the astronomy game a bit now. So we've been having a lot of fun in a lot of different areas. Let's see some other news here. Let's see what we got. Oh, on the IRS in the QRSS, not the IRS. That's another story. The QRSS. Game. We've got some interesting news. Mark, KF6KYI, he's got an interesting device. He's been trying to come up with a QRSS beacon. He's made some recordings into his iPod and has used the iPod to generate the QRSS. I guess he puts it into some sort of a loop, and he's used it successfully. He's got a little QRPP transmitter on there, and it's worked, and he's gone transcontinental with it. So congratulations on that, Mark. Also, in QRSS, Stan down in Malta, 9H1LO, very innovative guy, very, very talented, a lot of great ideas, and he's put up a Maltese grabber. You gotta love it. It's like, of course, very evocative, the Maltese Falcon and all that, but the Maltese grabber is up in operation. I think it's down today, but Stan, I'm sure, will have it up real soon. And he's come up with some really great ways to make the past displays of his grabber visible. So very often, so if you want to find out whether your signal was making it to Malta, last night at 2000. Stan is working on a way where when you look at his grabber, it's not just a real-time display, but searchable back in time. Not forward in time. Forward in time would be would be an entirely different trick. But back in time, yes, you can search. So Good. Thanks for that, Stan, and wish you a lot of luck with your efforts there. I think everybody's going to benefit from it. You know, every time a new grabber comes on, especially from a remote location like, not really remote, but from a different location like Malta, it makes the whole game a lot more interesting. So thanks again, Stan. You know, this guy, CO2KK Arnie Coro in Cuba has been a real leader in QRP and homebrew, and Arnie has just come up with some really great articles and ideas. And I was reading through the transcript of his one of his more recent episodes of his program DXers Unlimited, and he got me into something else again. You know, sometimes in ham radio, when you talk to somebody and they get you interested in something else, you're grateful, but you're also kind of a bit annoyed because you know you've now been launched into an entirely new form of the knack, a new form of radio addiction. I remember one time I broke into a round table on 20 meter sideband, and we just started talking, and this was obviously a bunch of guys who'd been together for a long time and had been involved in all kinds of technical adventures. And I mentioned to them my recent work with the low Earth orbit satellites put up there by the Russians, and how easy it was to use these satellites and how much fun it was. And I could tell that they were really intrigued, but one of the guys just kind of groaned, and he said, "Oh, Bill, you've done it to us. Now we've got something else to work on. This is going to consume all of our time now." And so I almost had to apologize. I felt the same way when I read Arnie's article, because he was talking about, because I had just recently been up viewing Jupiter through the telescope. Arnie came out with the DX Unlimiters piece, in which he reminded me that it's quite possible with very simple gear to receive the naturally generated radio signals from Jupiter. And you don't need any really exotic parabolic UHF, VHF antennas and, low-temperature amplifiers or anything like that. No, you could do it with real simple gear. And a lot of times guys listen around 18, 19, 20 megahertz, certainly within the frequency range of all of our gear. And they tell me, and I've listened to recordings of it, they tell me it sounds sort of like slow waves crashing on the beach. You know, if you got the knack and you hear something like this, for some reason you just want to do it. You just want to hear it yourself. You don't want to hear it on an MP3 file coming out of the internet. That's fine. You want to hear it on your own Drake 2B. So I admit it, guys. I tried. I didn't really succeed. I didn't try too hard. I gave it a shot. I listened for a while. I knew Jupiter was above the horizon, but I didn't hear anything yet. So I may make some additional efforts in this area, because I would like to get those. I would like to get Jupiter into the log, you know. So anyway, thanks to Arnie for sending that along. We have an award here, guys, and I've decided every once in a while to come up with an award. It's the Brass Fig Legee with Bronze Oak Leaf Palm. Of course, this is the award originated by our good friend, the good friend of all solder smokers, of all knack victims, Gene Shepard. This week, the Brass Fig Legee with Bronze Oak Leaf Palm, and I hope Shep wouldn't mind me continuing with his award tradition. We're going to award it to a bunch of guys who have figured out how to use the motion sensors in laptops to form a seismic network. I read about this, I think, on the Popular Science or on the Popular Science website. You know, all these computers are sitting there online, and one very brilliant guy or a group of them realized that the laptops have in them motion sensors. And the motion sensors are designed basically to, I think, freeze up or lift the heads off the hard drive if you drop the thing, if the computer senses that it's in free fall, it does something to the hard drive so that on impact, all your data is not lost. That's pretty smart all by itself. But these guys have taken the, taken that bit of technology and that bit of, bit of software and hardware and moved it to a new level. And they've come up with some software that allows these motion sensors to serve as seismic, earthquake, detectors. And, I guess when your computer is idling and you've just got it sitting there and it's not doing anything, with this software, it can form part of a seismic network that would provide additional information in the event of earthquake or impending earthquake. So, hey, I thought that was pretty cool. And again, this week's Brass Fig Legee with Bronze Oak Leaf Palms. Brass Oak Leaf Palm to the guy who figured that one out. In the area of really kind of interesting technological stuff, I put up on the blog an entry called NukeNak. I'm not sure where. I think probably from Slashdot I found this. It's an article about a bunch of guys who have a hobby, I think, that's even more unusual than ours. That's kind of hard to do, guys, when you think about what we do. These guys are, I think, further over on the geeky, kind of knackish end of the technology spectrum. You're going to think that this is all some sort of a hoax and that these guys are sort of in the aluminum foil hat brigade or something like that. No, it's for real. They're interested in having in their workshops creating nuclear fusion and generating the effects caused by fusing atoms together. It's not cold fusion. I know that, you know, there's a huge controversy about cold fusion and whether it's a hoax and whether it can happen. Wayne Green, who we mentioned a few weeks ago, was deeply involved in this kind of debate. But, this is just regular old nuclear fusion. Apparently it's possible to do it in your home workshop. We're not necessarily recommending it here, by the way, but it is possible. Now, these guys have not solved the world's energy woes. I think the reason is that it takes them, there's far more energy input than output. But there was some videos on of these guys with their, I guess we can call them their fusion rigs in operation. And, it really, from the technical perspective, it looked really interesting. Their workshops looked like ours. They even had places that looked vaguely like Radio Shacks. But what's going on in there is not communication on the 20-meter band. It's nuclear fusion. I think you guys would really like the article. Check out the blog. The links are there. And really watch the video too. There's a video there that was really, I mean, it was really kind of sweet. The guy was being interviewed with his wife, and they were obviously two really, really nice people. And the wife seemed really especially, kind and tolerant of her husband's eccentricities. and she said very sincerely, she said, "Well, you know, it's okay because he's promised me that if he does blow the house up, he will replace it." Okay, it's a deal. I thought it was real nice. So check that out. That's sort of the good news there. Some other stuff you find on the net. I don't know if you guys have noticed this, but the Maker blog. I'm a big fan of the Maker blog, and I'm hoping that this comment might help push them back in the technical direction, but sometimes the Maker blog seems to be kind of drifting away from technology and deeper into, it's a little bit silly and a little bit too artsy for us. I don't know. That may be the way they want to go. That may be their thing, but, it's getting sort of far away from technology and hardware and getting into the more, kind of artsy, silly stuff. Could they be losing the knack over there at MakerBlog? I hope not. And, well, let's just hope that they come back. It started out as something that was very similar to another blog that's out there called Hackaday. And I really like Hackaday. Hackaday definitely still has the knack. But MakerBlog, I think it's getting a little bit too broad in its approach. But I find myself drifting away from the MakerBlog. Let's see what else. Something else I put up on the blog recently, and this is a guy that I mentioned him with real reverence, and as I said in the blog, I'm reluctant to just say kind of a flip wow knack victim. We're talking about a guy here who's a real radio hero. Philo T. Farnsworth, inventor of television. I think we've talked about Philo T. Farnsworth before, and I think it was in the video about the history of radio. I forget it was a PBS series, and I forget the title of it, On the Air, or something like that. They had a little clip where they showed the moment or a video describing the moment in which young Philo at age 14 was out there plowing the fields at the family farm in Idaho. I think it was Idaho. And he, when he looked back at the furrows that he had put in the field, he had a flash of insight, and he came up with the idea for a scanning electronic television system. And the rest is history. Some of it's sad history, of course, as the invention was essentially stolen from him. But I came across on the web a book about Philo T. Farnsworth, and the first chapter is available for download. And I really, really enjoyed this article. Great stuff. I really recommend it. Very inspirational. About a guy, I mean, I could say it. I say it with reverence. I'm not being flip here, but Philo definitely had the knack, and it describes his early days and his struggles to get involved in radio and electronics, even when out on what was pretty much still the Western frontier, and what he had to do in those days to stay in technology. So I found it really, really inspiring. And as you read through it, I'm sure like I did, you'll find yourself saying, yeah, this guy had the knack. For example, at one point, when he was just a kid, they were trying to get the electrical generator. I think it was wind power generator for the farm, fixed, and some techs came out and kind of messed around with it, but he was watching them, and he realized that they weren't doing it right. And later he told his father that these guys had not known what they were doing, and he said to his father, "Let me fix it." So, you could almost see, it's almost just like Dilbert, fixing the EEG machine in the doctor's office. But young Philo was allowed to go to work on the generator, and he, of course, he got it working. So, great stuff. Check out the blog, find the link, read the chapter, buy the book. I think it's really worthwhile. Another article. This one, let me see. On the blog. I'm sorry. I give credit to the guy who sent it to me, but I didn't write it down here, so I don't have it in front of me. But Kind of a similar article came in. It's about, and this is up on the blog also, the link. The title of the article is Try Fixing It Yourself by Jim Williams of Linear Technology Corporation. It's on a website called EDN Access. I think it's Electronic Design Notes or something like that. But this is an article from back in 1995, and it describes Jim Williams' love for equipment repair. This guy, a very, very talented, self-taught engineer, in one of his first jobs at MIT, part of his contract with MIT was that they would provide him with test gear, but they wouldn't give him a budget for fixing the test gear. At first he complained, but then because he would have to do all the repair on the test gear himself. But anyway, he stuck with it, and he came to like the repair process. He came to like the troubleshooting so much that he actually started taking gear out and persuading people who knew what they were doing to go in there and put complicated faults in the equipment, so then that he would later have the pleasure of finding the fault and fixing the gear. Again, this is for outsiders. They would find this bizarre. I think even many insiders would find this kind of unusual. But as knack victims here, we understand what Jim was doing. He says, quote, I offered free repair services to other labs that would bring me instruments to fix. I had few takers. People had repair budgets and were unwilling to risk their equipment to my unproven care. Finally, in desperation, I paid people in standard MIT currency, Coke and pizza, to deliberately disable my test equipment so I could fix it. Another paragraph I just want to share with you. The fact that the instrument is broken provides a unique opportunity. A broken instrument, or whatever is at hand, is a capsulized mystery, a puzzle with a definite and very singular right answer. As a result, you're forced to measure your performance against an absolute non-negotiable standard. When you're finished, the thing either works or it doesn't work. Absolutely right. And anyway, I guess I entitled the blog entry The Joy of Fixing Things, because Jim, I think better than anybody else, really captures it. He concludes the article with a little quote that was, for me, it was the first time I'd heard anybody else say it. I knew a guy back in Virginia, and I forget his name and call sign now, but we used to go to Hamfests, and we used to cross paths at Hamfests in Northern Virginia. And he used to, when he found a piece of gear, if the seller was honest enough to admit that the thing didn't work, he would respond, great, I pay extra for that. People thought he was nuts. But of course he wasn't. And I finally found in this article by Jim Williams somebody else who had the same attitude. It says here, he concludes his article by saying, and finally, fixing is simply a lot of fun. I'm probably the only person at an electronic flea market who pays more for the busted stuff than for the equipment that works. Oh boy, it's broken. Life just doesn't get any better than this. Jim, you're not alone. There's the guy I knew in Virginia who did the same thing. Anyway, check out Jim's article, and I put a link up there also to his book, Analog Equipment Design. It looks like it'd be an interesting one for us. I haven't checked out the book myself, but the article was so good, I'm sure the book will be the same. All right, yesterday I spent the day cleaning out the shack. You know, fall is upon us. The nights are getting longer. The temperature's dropping. And thoughts turn, of course, to home brewing equipment and fall and wintertime projects. I got a couple things going on the workbench. One is, I think I mentioned, I have resurrected a project that I built, something I built in London, and I was never quite sure that I got it completely working properly. It's a simple double sideband project. In London, I built it for 40, but here I'm going to build it for for 80 meters, rebuild it for 80. It's what I call my kick panel transmitter. I call it, sorry, I got a bit of a cold. I call it the kick panel project because the cabinet is made from a piece of aluminum that was intended to be the kick panel on a door. You know, in a lot of public buildings, if people are moving the door open a lot to, and using their foot to open it, they put a piece of aluminum down there to prevent the thing from getting all worn out. And I just wrapped it around the kitchen breadboard that serves as the base for the rig. And so it's called the kick panel rig. I joke appropriately enough because I have often thought about kicking it out the door. But anyway, the kick panel rig has been resurrected, and I've got it working up through the balanced modulator stage. I'm now in the process of measuring how much power I have coming out of the balanced modulator, and I'm going to design I've started to design the series of amplifiers to get it up to a couple of watts or so, and I'm trying to do it systematically. I'm trying to apply the lessons learned in EMRFD, and I'm trying to get away from cut and try, and I'm trying, as Wes and others have advised, to be more methodical about it and to measure and determine how much gain I want at each stage, and determine how much I have coming out of the modulator, how much power I'm starting with, and how much I want to end up with. Thinking about things like gain distribution and things that in the past I just very recklessly disregarded. So hopefully this will be it's certainly been a learning process already, and I hope it goes a little bit more smoothly than previous projects. So that's one of the things I'm working on. I got another idea here too. I keep getting pulled back into QRSS. My QRSS beacon is on the air right now, by the way, as we speak. It's pumping out a massive 20 milliwatts on 10.140070. And I can see it, not right now, it's a little bit early in the morning, but I can see it during the course of the day popping up on the online grabbers in Belgium and Denmark, and also on occasion in northern Italy. I don't think I've seen it on Stan's Maltese grabber down to the south, but I'm sure that's just a matter of time. And recently Vern over there in Nova Scotia reported it across the pond again. So anyway, my problem is that, well, I'd like to do some experimenting with different forms of modulation on the transmitter. For example, I want to go from the standard just Morse on-off keying to a dual frequency shift keying, where the keying circuitry would cause the transmitter not to go on and off, but would switch in a bit of additional reactance in the oscillator and cause, for example, the dots and dashes to be a few hertz higher than the carrier. I would leave the RF on all the time, and then so instead of seeing dots and dashes streaming across the QRSS receiver screen, you would see almost like a sawtooth pattern of dots and dashes going across, because every time the key went down, the frequency would shift up just by, you know, 3, 4, 5 hertz. So it would appear as a kind of a jagged sawtooth pattern with the dots and dashes still clearly visible. Guys advise that this is a good way to do it because it's more visible, and for a lot of reasons they think it's a better way to modulate. So I want to do this, but I'm reluctant to do it because, as you've heard from from previous shows, it's a problem because once I get off frequency, it's a real struggle to get the transmitter back in that narrow 100 hertz wide band. My frequency counter is still dead. And once I get this thing on frequency, I'm really reluctant to mess with it because the slightest movement causes it to go out of the band, and then getting it back into the band is a real hassle. But here's what I want to do. I think I've come up with a solution. When I ordered the crystals for this thing, I ordered several of them. One of them is in the rig right now. The other is in Vermont, waiting to be connected to a tunnel diode of some sort. we may hear more about this in the fall, but the hero of the Hobbit Hole, the poet laureate of ham radio, Michael AA1TJ, has the second one, and I'm hoping that he's gonna turn it into some sort of really unique very low power QRSS beacon. That's where the second one went. I have a third crystal sitting here. And what my plan is to construct a frequency standard. Just build a little oscillator with voltage regulation and make it real stable, wrap it up in styrofoam. And then before I work on my real beacon, just set just zero beat the test oscillator or the frequency standard oscillator with my on frequency 10140070 transmitter. Okay, so then I've got it set now. I've got a frequency standard. I put that to the side. Then I can crack open my beacon transmitter, work on it, and mess around with the modulating schemes, mess around with the coupling between the oscillator and the first RF amp, do all that stuff, knowing that when the time comes to put my real beacon back on the air, all I have to do is fire up the frequency standard, zero beat, and I can zero beat using Spectran or Argo or one of the bits of software there to get a really accurate zero beat. Then I just turn the thing on and I should be back on the air, back on frequency, and I won't have to go through all the hassle of trying to get myself in that 100 hertz band. So that's my plan, and I'm going to build a little frequency standard oscillator to help keep me in the QRSS frequency range. All right, let's see what else we got going here. Oh man, I got so much stuff. I don't know where I put it all. I had some. Hold on. Sorry, I got a little bit disorganized here as I was organizing. anyway, Woody, I forgot the call here. I should write these things down. But we've got some jokes from a listener who's been with us for a long time. Woody has sent in some jokes, so I think it's time for a solder joke. Why not a solder joke? Since we were talking about repair. Let's see. Another thing here. Yeah, the joys of repair. We'll try to do a solder joke here in every episode. Today's solder joke. It's called Comprehending Engineers Take 4. There was an engineer who had an exceptional gift for fixing all things mechanical. After serving his company loyally for over 30 years, he happily retired. Several years later, the company contacted him regarding a seemingly impossible problem they were having with one of their multi-million dollar machines. They had tried everything and everyone to get the machine to work, but to no avail. In desperation, they called on the retired engineer who had solved many of their problems in the past. The engineer reluctantly took the challenge. He spent a day studying the huge machine. At the end of the day, he marked a small X in chalk on a particular component of the machine and stated, "This is where your problem is." The part was replaced and the machine worked perfectly again. The company received a bill for $50,000 from the engineer for his services. They demanded an itemized accounting of his charges. The engineer responded briefly, "One chalk mark, $1. Knowing where to put it, $49,999. It was paid in full and the engineer retired again in peace. Fine business. Yeah, there you go. Troubleshooting. You guys have probably heard that one, but I thought it was pretty good and apropos, and we'll, that'll be the first of the new Solder Smoke series, and thanks for Woody for sending that along. Let's see. Hey, really good news. You read QRPL. I came back from Sardinia and, fired up QRPL on the main computer there and found all kinds of discussion about a really good development from the ARRL. They have put all the QST articles from 1915 to 2004 online. Fine business. Excellent. Very, very, very good. Thanks to the guys there up in Newington, Connecticut for another great service to the amateur radio community. I think this is great. It's available to ARRL members, and it's another good reason to be a member of the league. And I intend to make use of this thing. I've always, wished I had the complete selection of CDs and all that, but never bought them. They were quite pricey. But now they're all online. Good going. Yeah, all right. You can search for all those great articles from days gone by. There's already been some great discussion about what some of the best articles are. And really interesting. I'm glad to see that that Wes Hayward's 1968 article on direct conversion receivers, a forgotten technique, or neglected technique, I think, is in there. That's certainly one of my favorites. I have that on the shelf here. I don't carry too many QSTs around with me, but that article is one of them that I do, and I have that. I think it's November 1968. I have that one sitting on the shelf here with me in Rome. That's certainly one of my favorites. So good thing to QST. Speaking of CDs, I was recently given, and the fellows who gave it to me went to a lot of trouble to get it to me, so I really want to thank them. The complete collection of Spratt, the new CD. I got it here. Very, very beautiful cover here of Spratt. The CD, issues 1 to 132, the full set, 1975 to 2007. Tony Fishpool got this to me. He tried several times to get it to me through the various postal systems that we have available, and they never made it. I don't know where. Maybe, I don't know what happened to them, but they didn't get here, but Tony was so determined to get this thing to me, and that he actually brought it to Rome and put it in a post box here in Rome. Let me explain. Tony was on a vacation trip a cruise that brought him into Rome, and he and I were planning on meeting up here. I really wanted to meet him. There was a chance that we were going to meet. It depended on my work schedule and his ship schedule. I didn't want to make him miss the ship or anything like that, but we had agreed that during his day in Rome, we would try to get in touch and link up if only briefly. But there were technical difficulties. I think something happened with his cell phone and he lost my phone number. I had his phone number and I thought I called him, but maybe I did so without my reading glasses. You guys know what I'm talking about. Hey, I'm at the big 5-0. So, those BlackBerry buttons are awful small. And if I don't have my reading glasses, well, a misdial is really possible. And I called, and the people seemed to know Tony. They went looking for Tony, but apparently it wasn't the Tony that I was looking for. So, unfortunately, we didn't meet up here in Rome, but Tony was kind enough to put the Spratt on CD in the mail. I really recommend it. If you guys are getting into this game recently, you really want to have the full set of sprats. My it's by far my favorite QRP periodical, and a really very nice CD with a great design on the cover. Oh yeah, on the cover of the CD they have the drawing that is my the favorite sprat cover of all time for my kids. It features the hamster in the circular cage on the treadmill, running along, powering the little homebrew QRP rig. I'm glad they selected that for the cover of the the cover of the print on the CD. And there's a great picture on the back, the classic shot of George Dobbs in his workshop, and all kinds of great. Great projects, loop antennas, oscilloscopes, Chris Page down there. Yeah, Tony, thanks very much for getting that to me. And again, thanks to everybody involved in putting Sprat together. And for those of you who are not reading it, well, you really should be. You're missing something. Speaking of publications, somebody sent me a note that that Solid State Design for the Radio Amateur has there's been a major uptick in price. A quote, I don't know if it actually sold for this, but it was quoted in one of the online bookstores. $399.89. Ooh, wow. It's making me rethink my investment decisions. I don't know. You know, all the stocks, bonds, 401ks, IRAs, all that, I'm thinking... The gurus of Wall Street are missing out on a major opportunity here. A lot of people could be secure in their retirement just by buying a sufficient quantity of Solid State Design for the Radio Amateur. $399.89. Wow. All right. Let's see. What else do we have here? One final little technical story before we move on. Well, a couple things here. I've described to you my antenna. It's clandestine. It's almost invisible. It's just a piece of wire that goes out the window. One little piece of wire goes straight up to the roof. It goes up. We're on the fourth floor of the roof. The building has six floors, so it goes up two floors. Up on the roof, it kind of stretches along the length of the building, and that's basically it. I've got a little L network or T network antenna tuner here. And that's fine. I noticed on the outside of the building, I have a little fishing weight that kind of holds the wire down and prevents it from kind of blowing about in the wind. And also, it holds the wire down over a portion of the building's exterior that's painted white, because my wire is white. So it helps with the camouflage. But it's just a little fishing weight. And it kind of blows around in the wind a little bit, but I didn't really think this would cause much of a problem. I noticed a few days after we got back from Sardinia that my signal, my QRSS signal, really wasn't making it into the beacon, into the grabbers, the way it usually did. I mean, it was vaguely visible, but it wasn't nearly as strong. But everything at the transmitter end seemed to be okay. The SWR meter was moving the way it normally moves, and I thought everything was okay. But I noticed, I took a look at the wire yesterday. I noticed that it was blowing around a bit more than normal. And what had happened was, over time, the movement had allowed the weight, the fishing weight, to actually kind of, I guess, cut its way through the wire. And so now there was actually a gap in the little lead wire up to the antenna. But the interesting thing was, it didn't stop it from operating completely. I guess what happened was the wires were kind of wrapped around together, and so even though the direct electrical connection was lost, there was enough capacitive coupling between the two bits of wire there, kind of a gimmick, kind of little capacitor. We'd call it a gimmick linkage, that the things continued to work after a fashion. Of course, it works better now that I've actually connected the two wires together. But anyway, that was my little bit of antenna misfortune. And as soon as I did it, I noticed that my 20 milliwatts was back into the back into the grabbers is a lot stronger, a lot better. All right. You know, we have a special feature here before I launch into mailbag. This is a stereo feature. It's sent to us by Roger Hayward, by Wes's son. Roger's a good friend of Solder Smoke, a frequent contributor of ideas and advice and inspiration. And Roger has been working on a special project. We've variously referred to it as his double sideband project or the binaural project. It's definitely in the dual category. I'm going to try to plug this in here in stereo mode because it's important that this be listened to in stereo. So put on your headphones and for this segment and listen to it, and you'll immediately get some insight into the dual, to the binaural, to the double sideband nature of Roger's latest homebrew project. Congratulations, really sincere congratulations to Roger on this, and so I think you'll enjoy this rather unusual stereo Solder Smoke episode. Here goes.
Hey Bill, it's Roger KA70XM from Beaverton, Oregon, and in the spirit of Solder Smoke and your radio checks, I wanted to send you a small audio snippet from the shack here. This is a binaural recording, air check from a couple nights ago. Put your headphones on and make sure you're in stereo and enjoy the sounds from the shack here at KA70XM.
Okay, there you go. I think you guys figured out what was going on there. So congratulations to Roger and his wife and to Granddad Wes. Great, wonderful. And best of luck to all of you. All right, now it's time for... Hold on. Oh, wow, I almost hit the wrong gong. There we go. Hold on. Stand by.
It's time for...
Solder Smoke mailbag.
Indeed. Yeah, Solder Smoke mailbag. A lot of mails accumulated over the previous, I guess, 3 or 4 weeks here. We'll have to go through kind of quickly. Ted, AJ8T on the Lunar Lasers, he points out that the Russians had reflectors on their Lunok probes. They had those little cars riding around on the moon while Neil Armstrong was doing his thing around the same time. The Russians had rovers out there riding around. I think they actually did a sample return after. It was, of course, after Neil got back, but that was quite a technical achievement, too. I'm always amazed by and kind of awed by the technical achievements of the Soviet space program. They did some amazing stuff. They flew balloons through the atmosphere of Venus. That was amazing, and I think a lot of us, I guess because the Cold War was preventing a lot of the information from being disseminated, but I don't think we at the time had really focused on the really stunning achievements that was involved there. I'm glad Ted pointed out that the Russians also had reflectors on the Lunok probes. G0WAT reports that HogCon, this is the Hedgehog Group, this is the home county's QRP club, is having its first convention, HogCon, and it'll be next week, the 21st of September, in Hertfordshire, in Hertz, Stavang, I lived there so long, I should be able to pronounce this. Stavange, I think it is. Oh man, I got it wrong. But it's in Hertfordshire, in Herts. And contact, the guys at the Home Counties QRP Club for more information. It's on the 21st of September. I am hedgehog number four. Really pleased with that designation. I won't be able to make it to this one, but you never know, in the future I might show up for HogCon. But good luck to the organizers, and I hope you have a good HogFest there. Bob, AF6C, provided me really good information on my counter. And I printed it out, and I've stuck it in the counter box, and I think that's going to be one of my fall-winter projects. Thanks very much, Bob, for sending that along. He confirms that Carl and Jerry definitely have the knack. Yes, indeed. And he points out that there's a new Gene Shepard, not a new Gene Shepard episode. That'd be big news. But there's a Gene Shepard episode out there that we might not have focused on yet, that deals with him laying down wire for Army field telephones. I don't have the link yet, but somebody send me the link. I'll put it up on the blog and we can all enjoy it together. I think it's always fun to put another episode from Shep up there, and this one definitely sounds like it's NAC related. Mark, KI9OOI, asks about using the Italian language when dealing with, when on the air here from Italy. I do try to use it. It's some of the best language practice that I get. I was on 20 double sideband last night, talking to IK0 Zulu Mike Hotel and my good friend Italy Zero Yankee Radio and Giorgio, and it's all in Italian. So my Italian is far from good and far from pretty, but we communicate, and it's great fun to use it. So he also. Mark also comments on the audio quality. I did some tests over the last few weeks with some introducing some low pass filtering during a portion of the show to get rid of some of the sibilant sounds. He says he likes it without the low pass filtering. So okay, no more low pass filtering. We'll have to tackle the S's in a different way. Steve Snort Rosin. WB6TNL writes in about a project that is really almost too disgusting to mention here on Solder Smoke, and you know it's got to be really disgusting to cross that line. It's regarding the use of rat neurons in kind of robotic projects. He cautions. Don't tell Michael AA1TJ about this. Of course, he's referring to Michael's extreme willingness to use innovative bits of QRP technology. Yeah, I think you're right. I think we should draw the line there. Okay, guys, here's a new rule for the Solder Smoke community. Tunnel diodes are okay, but please, no rat neurons. Thanks for that, Steve. Scott, KD5NJR. Points out that the name of the book that we've been talking about the Apollo Moonwalkers, is Moondust, and the author is Andrew Smith. Yeah, great. I saw it. It's out on my bookshelf here. Morris, KB6QR, provides some suggestions on the Solder Smoke lexicon. He says that... he suggests, and I got my doubts about this one, but instead of saying that someone is knackered, and we discussed the British problem here, knackered means, you know, many different things here. Morris suggests that if someone has a bad case of this, we say that he is benacked. I don't know. Benacked. Yeah. I just can't see Dilbert being be anything. So I don't know, Morris. Let's think about that some more. Jerry, NR5A, our man in South Dakota, reports that he has purchased a Drake 2A. It needs some work. I think I commented that, I think I told Jerry that the 2A, I mean the 2B, well look, you know how I feel about the 2B. It's a long, emotional relationship. The 2A, I find it difficult to say anything bad about the 2B, but the 2A might have some advantages. I don't think the filtering is as narrow in the 2A, and my one complaint about the 2B is that sometimes it's a bit narrow for listening to AM. So, you might have got some advantages there. Jerry's also looking for a Q multiplier. I think he has one. He's going to be working on it. The Q multiplier should take care of the narrow filter issue there quite nicely. Jonathan, our man in Japan, 7J1 AWL, did get on the air from Vietnam. When he was on vacation, he was X-ray Victor 2 Oscar Charlie. Oscar Charlie, the name of his Oscar, the name of his young harmonic there, who accompanied him on the trip. I put links to Jonathan's trip, his fine business, his amazing adventure in Vietnam, and check it out. It looked like he had a really amazing location, really good pictures. One very cute picture of Oscar with the helmet, the Vietnamese helmet on there. So looked like a great trip, and thanks for sharing that with us, Jonathan. Rick, KC0PET, has gone solar-powered, fine business. Lars, OZ1C, OZ1CJX, is suffering from severe neck symptoms. He takes pictures of ham radio license plates. When he looks at water fountains, you know, you're there in the park with the family, there's the beautiful water fountain shooting up, straight up into the air, with a lot of water in the pool below it. Lars says when he sees this thing, he inevitably thinks of ground plane antennas. Lars has reports that he has heard CW in Kylie Minogue songs. Lars, you really need some help, my friend. This is one of the more severe cases of the knack. We're not sure whether periodic doses of solder smoke will be sufficient to deal with this. We might have to bring you into the special 12-step program. thanks for sharing that with us, Lars. Doc Dave, K8WPE, reports that that he's happy to have the knack because it keeps him away, quote, from wild women in bars. Good thing, Doc. Yeah, it does. It keeps a lot of us out of trouble. Ted, AJ8T, has sent in a website with a with something that I know will appeal to Michael, AA1TJ. This is a special online museum devoted to one of the original germanium transistors, the CK722. So those of you who were really nostalgic about the CK722, check out the website. I've got a picture of it up on the I've got it all up on the blog, so check it out. Our man in Dubai, Ron Sparks, AG5RS, sent in information on a recent balloon launch from South Texas. Ron, of course, is in Dubai, but through the internet, he was able to work through the balloon that was launched by his buddies back there in South Texas. He's got some ideas on QRSS. Ron is still having trouble getting a license there in Dubai. If any of you guys have suggestions, or if any of you know a guy or something like that, please let us know. We would like to get help our friend Ron get on the air. Jorge Luis, KA4SGU, sent in a nice website about projects during World War II to surreptitiously send radio parts to prisoners of war. Very interesting. Thanks for that, Jorge Luis. Alan Jones, N8WQ, has sent me a very nice schematic drawing program. Hopefully this will get us away from my horribly ugly hand-drawn schematics. I haven't really used it yet, but it sounds promising, and I hope to give it a try. And let's see what else we got. Patrick, KF4LMZ, has caught a variation of the knack that I guess we're calling QRSSitis. It manifests itself in an unusual desire to transmit low power signals very, very slowly. Patrick did something unusual here. He found a 10.140 megahertz crystal, which is of course the essential ingredient. And he found it in an old synthesized CB rig. So those of you who are interested in catching QRSSitis, check out that junk pile. You might find a suitable rock inside one of the old synthesized Citizens Band rigs. Very fine business. All right, great. Guys, we're over time. I guess all this news accumulated. We're at an hour and 4 minutes or so. Thanks for everybody for sending in the news. We'll try to be more regular in our every other week schedule here as we move into the fall. Good luck with all your projects. And I hope you all have a good fall season. 7-3 from Rome.